It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Joined this week by James Cratch. Keith Sargent is a coronavirus casualty, at least when it comes to covering Rutgers right now. He's out doing the world's important work. Cratch, it's been 2 months since we've done this, and the world has literally changed. It's amazing. I mean, it's changed in ways that you could never have imagined the stuff that's happened. I mean, it's just unspeakably different. And I think we're turning the corner. I'm not sure. Some days I think we're never going to turn the corner. I mean, how you doing?
I'm hanging in there. You know, it's been interesting. Cause I think we taped the last podcast, like right when it happened, right when Rutgers had been knocked out of the NCAA tournament.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think we knew at that point that we might be doing this for a while, but I think I was certainly optimistic that, if you would have told me on March 13th, 14th, whenever it was, like, well, we know what's – are we going to be back to normal by the end of May into June? I would have been like, yes, I would think so, but we clearly are not. So
– oh, we're not.
Continue on.
I mean, it seems like we're in a holding pattern exactly where we were when this started. I mean,
yes, exactly.
It's just kind of incredible. And, you know, and I think about all the ways it's changed my life. You got a dog in your car.
I have a dog now. I mean,
That's certainly a development that, you know, I guess in one of the millions of people who have decided to use their time at home to adopt a pet. How's that going?
It's going well. We're on week two with Hazel the Schnoodle. She's a lovely little puppy, Schnoodle. 3.5 months old,
yeah.
Schnauzer poodle mix. And I actually learned this, I'll be honest, like we just, you know, my girlfriend and I want to get a dog. So we went out, you know, and look, it's a good thing. It's hard to get a dog on the East Coast right now.
Yeah. Wow.
You know, the shelters are pretty empty, which is great.
That's great.
But when you're kind of on the back end of that trend, there's not a lot of dogs out there, you know, and obviously, you know, yeah, there's certain breed restrictions apartments have, so it gets kind of tough. So we just kind of hadn't ever researched a Schnoodle or thought about a Schnoodle, and we kind of met Hazel, and we took a liking to her, obviously, so we brought her home. And I've kind of learned after the fact that, you know, Schnauzers are easy to train. Apparently, Schnoodles are a very popular form of therapy dog. Because, and I've learned this from our dog, you know, knock on wood, Hazel doesn't bark a lot.
Yeah.
She's very sweet and loving and obedient. She really hasn't had many accidents in the home. So she seems like, so far, like the perfect dog. You know, she's probably going to be 15 to 20 pounds when it's all said and done. Cute as a button. And yeah, she's been great.
I got to tell you, Schnoodle, though, that sounds like a box of snack food you'd get in college when you were stoned. Like, hey, man.
Yeah.
Pass me the Schnoodles, would you?
No, and like my initial thought was like, I'm like on my phone like researching the Schnoodle as like she's running around in circles playing with us, because, you know, I've had past experience, like sometimes little dogs are a little kind of nasty, for want of a better term, you know, a little tippy, and you know, and I was like, oh, is a Schnauzer like, you know, a Chihuahua where it wants to rip your head off? And
yes.
No, thankfully, no. Schnauzers are wonderful animals.
That's good to know.
It's good to know.
Yes. You know, plenty of time. We're our family dog, 12 and a half, inside the quarantine, It's just a walking, living excuse to not do something. Like the dog will walk in the room and go, oh, look, here's Maggie. And the kids are at the floor. That's kind of like that when you're trapped in the house all day. You're looking for any reason. Yeah. All right, let's talk some football here, guys. We've got a lot to catch up on. I mean, I guess, you know, from the standpoint of the only thing that matters really is, are we going to have a season? That's the prevailing question. And if the answer to that is yes, what's that season going to look like? And I made a bunch of calls, you know, over the course of this thing. And it seems like depends on who you're talking to, when you're talking to them, and where they live for the answer to that question. And it's just amazing to me how many different scenarios are out there. I mean, you know, you got places like SEC. They think, oh, we're just going to show up and there's going to be 80,000 people in our stadium. And you got places up here where you're like, you know, I just can't imagine the scenario where they're playing. I mean, what's your thought now? Where do you stand on specifically what's going to happen with Rutgers football when we get to the point where the season begins?
I think they're going to play. There's no doubt in my mind they are going to, unless there's some sort of horrific resurgence of the virus, they are going to, or the Big Ten at a overall umbrella level says we're shutting it down, which I do not see happening. I think Rutgers, there's going to be a college football season in the fall. I think right now I would say it starts on time and they play 12 games. I think there's a possibility that the season maybe gets started at the end of September. Maybe they start a couple weeks late. Mm-hmm. I think the you know, if you look at the Big Ten schedule, Rutgers has their Big Ten opener. It's supposed to be at Ohio State on September 26th, which is the fourth weekend of the season. There's only 7 Big Ten conference games that are being played in the first 3 weeks. So the Big Ten could very easily say, we're starting on September 26th. We're wiping out non-conference schedules to some extent, and we're going to just find a place to play those conference games that we missed. I know people have talked about a conference-only schedule. I don't buy that for a couple of reasons. One, you have to allow Iowa State to play Iowa right. In the conference. I think, two, if you're playing Notre Dame like Wisconsin is, you're going to want to play Notre Dame.
Of course.
Three, you know, I saw someone say, well, what happens if the American plays a football like only schedule and Army can't play Navy? Let me just start off with this.
Yeah, Army's going to play Navy.
If there's one game in the country played, if Navy has a choice between playing an American only schedule and playing one game against Army, they're going to play Army.
Yeah.
You know, I think the same way, like, USC is going to play Notre Dame unless – like the world has ended. Right. So don't tell the Pac-12 they only play conference games. They're going to play Notre Dame, USC. So I think you're going to have that happen. I mean, I think, yeah, there's a good chance that the SEC is going to kind of rip roar and just fly away. I think there's a very good chance that we get to a point where the SEC might play 12 full games. You know, maybe the Pac-12 plays a full season. You know, maybe the Big Ten says we're playing 10. I do think there's going to be a season. I think they'll get it done. I think the move to end the instructional school years at Thanksgiving break is a smart move. I think that's going to help, you know, not bring all the students back. I mean, first off, it's just a waste of time. I mean, I remember when I went to South Carolina, I would come home for Thanksgiving. I'd fly out on Friday to go to the Carolina-Clemson game, and I basically would be back home 8 days later.
Right. It doesn't make any sense. Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense. So I do think there's going to be a season. The biggest thing I think, and I was off last week, and the way that people kind of bounce back and forth when every time somebody says something and we act like.
Right. Right.
The Wall Street Journal story this past weekend, the Michigan president didn't say anything that anyone else has not been saying. He said, if we don't have students on campus, we're not going to play football. Which is basically what the conference commissioners told Mike Pence, you know, when the White House had a call back in March. I think what people are misconstruing is I don't think the Michigan president meant if we can't jam 250 freshmen into a poli-sci 101 lecture hall, we can't play football.
No.
I just think there needs to be more people on campus than the students that make them money on the football field is what they're saying.
Yeah. And I do feel that it's going to be different on campus regardless, I do agree with you now that students are going to be back in some way. There's not going to be all remote learning, at least out here in this corner of the woods. They're, even at Rutgers, yeah. I think they're planning, from what I understand, they're planning to have students yeah. there. So there's going to be a fall semester. Now, where I got to come to, the thing that I'm curious about is, what does that mean if they have a football season, if they're playing games, who's allowed into the stadium? How do they, you know, do some kind of smart, and you can't social distance with 30,000 people, even 10,000 no. people. So what are they going to do to, you know, allow some semblance of normalcy? Who gets first priority to go in? I mean, there's so many little questions about how you handle the logistics of it. What about the media access? What about everything that goes to TV, everything that goes into this, tailgates? I mean, I can just go on and on. So if they're going to do it in a different way, if they're going to try to, you know, it changed the way we experience college football on the weekend, it's going to be a huge logistical undertaking.
Yeah. So I've heard a few things. I know Iowa State just announced today, we're taping this on Tuesday, that they anticipate as of now that they're going to have half capacity in their stadium, 30,000 fans. So they said, we've sold 22,000 season tickets. We're selling 8,000 more season tickets.
Right.
That is the only people that are left in the stadium. Now, I don't know. And they said, if we'll sell single game tickets if we our capacity increases. But right now, we're going to cap it at 30,000. I haven't had a chance to read into it. I don't know if that includes students. One of the things I heard was, well, if we're going to say that students being on campus is so critical to playing football, well, then the students should be in the stadium.
Yes.
So I think one of the things I heard, proposals I heard was, well, right now we can have 25 people at an outdoor gathering. Let's say by kickoff when they play Monmouth, it's 50 people in an outdoor gathering. Well, you get a group of 50 students, you plop them down somewhere in the bleachers, then you leave, you know, 6, 8, 10 feet of space, whatever you want, and then you put another group of 50 students down. And you just kind of have everyone spread out around the stadium.
Right. Yeah.
They could do that. I think with season ticket holders, obviously, like the Audi Club, as long as it's allowed, I mean, I you probably would have to limit it, but I would think that if you're allowed to have 30 people in an indoor gathering, they could probably take a box or two, put 30 people in there, and in that situation, in terms of like a liability issue, you probably have to sign off, you know, your right to,
right.
if you get COVID-19, to go at Rutgers, you know, I think.
And a lot of people are not going to do that. I will say that there are fans. This problem might solve itself. There are a lot of fans who are old, or who just don't want to have to take the risk to take the season off. I mean,
I think that's what I'm saying. I think that, and I read that, and that Iowa State said, if you're a season ticket holder and you don't want to come to the games, we're going to give you your money back, and we're going to hold your seat, right. hold your place in line for 2021. I think you know one of the things that I people said is well. Even if you don't let fans in the stadium, they're going to show up and tailgate. Now, I don't think that's as big of a concern for Rutgers, and it's not because where the stadium is on campus, they just shut the roads off and they don't let anyone near the stadium.
Right, right.
But when you have a stadium that's like smack dab in the middle of campus,
yeah.
I don't know, you know, like Lincoln, Nebraska, you know, because as Scott Frost said, you know, Lincoln, Nebraska needs 7 Husker home games to like, exist as a city, all those businesses.
Right.
So what happens when they don't get to go in a stadium, but they all, the 70,000 people decide they want to be in Lincoln, be outside the stadium and watch on big screens.
Right.
You know, that's, I think we're going to have an issue, but I do think there's going to be a season, you know, I thought the spring season was a very viable thing because I thought one, you could be a little bit safer, have more time to plan. Two, I thought TV partners would love it because yeah. if you're ESPN and the SEC is like, we're in the Big 12, like we're playing in September, and then you can talk the Big 10 and the Pac-12 into playing, kicking off after the Super Bowl, you almost get 2 college football seasons.
Right, right. And then the question is, what's going to happen when there's going to be a team or if someone's going to test positive and there could be several positive, you know, you just know it's going to happen. I mean, someone's going to have to forfeit games. I mean, there's just going to be a lot of logistical stuff that goes.
That's the thing too. Like, I think that one, I think the biggest, I think the most impactful thing that's happened since we last taped the podcast and it kind of flew under the radar, was when the NFL put out their schedule, and not one governor cried bloody murder. You know, how dare Roger Goodell say he's going to play a football game in my state, my, you know, some mayor in my city on this day? No one.
Well, it's a sure path to not getting reelected. That's part of the
reason. Well, exactly. So, like, I think in many ways, it would not shock me if the NFL is – we don't have pro sports until – or sports at all until the NFL.
Yeah.
Because I think the NFL is like – the NBA and MLB, everyone seems to – there's no way that we can go play sports again and be perfectly safe. Like, the bubble doesn't work. I think the other leagues – but the NFL doesn't care. They're just going to play the games. And if someone gets the virus, they're just going to bring up the practice squad.
Bring somebody else.
That's what they're going to do.
Like, hope it's not Patrick Mahomes. That's what they're going to do. Exactly.
Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, I think that's going to be the – and I think college football, like, if we talk about the most craven sports operations in America, the NFL is one, college football is two. Absolutely. I think, I also could see the NFL, because they're smart, saying, well, we're going to subsidize testing for all of college sports because – that's their feeder program. That's their minor league. You can't have that in danger. So I do think it's going to happen. I think it'll probably vary conference by conference, but I do think there's going to be a season.
All right. No, that's going to be fascinating to watch. So if there is a season, obviously it's going to be one of the most anticipated seasons for Rutgers in a long time. Yeah. I was thinking about this today, Kratz. If you were to make your list of COVID winners and losers, which is something that our website would have done as a slideshow a couple of years ago. Winners would be Jeff Bezos and Greg Schiano, and losers would probably be the rest of humanity. I mean, like, I'm trying to think of people who have come out looking at this thing.
Dr. Fauci's
a winner too. He'd go on the winner slide.
He's a winner.
The rest of us would be, you know.
I will say this. I was thinking about this. There is going to be some coach in college basketball that did not get fired because the pandemic stopped the season and school was worried about money. And then that guy's going to actually go win something someday. Like Richard Pitino, I think he was coming back anyway in Minnesota. But like
the guy at Boston College was definitely a goner.
Exactly. Jim Christian's going to be in the Elite Eight in 2 years. This saved this guy. You know, it's going to be like when George got suspended and Stick Michaels able to rebuild the farm system. Right. It's like, we didn't have to fire this guy, and look, we actually gave him time, and it worked out. So I would say a guy like that's the winner, but we don't know him yet.
But Schiano, I mean, and I can't even – it's a funny thing. I can't even say that the pandemic helped him, because I really do believe that, you know, not having any spring practices when you're a coach coming in, when you're bringing in a new offensive coordinator who's going to put in a new system, you want to bring in your defensive style and erase what the bad habits the other guy coached. I mean, there's a lot of things here that he lost out on because of that. That said, it certainly hasn't hurt him. And what you're seeing now with his recruiting, to me, is exactly why you brought this guy in here. I mean, he's just been able to, you know, and the things that impressed me the most, he's been able to reopen the Florida pipeline finally with Jim Panagos and go down there and get the players that were so important to this program when it was humming. And he's also, I mean, you just see the kind of people he's bringing in. Like, you just can tell right away, he cannot recruit enough defensive backs, and he knows that. He's completely changed the way that room looks. And he can't, you know, he's getting big people again. And he's getting big people that he can develop. You know, you can see the same kind of, you know, 6'7", 300 pounds, people they can add weight to, people who are being under-recruited. And, you know, I know people are fat. He's only got 2 stars. Well, I mean, his evaluation of the sort of body types and speed that you're looking for, I think you're seeing and getting those guys. I mean, what has impressed you the most for the last 2 months of what he's been able to do?
I think definitely the Florida stuff, because I ran the numbers. It's kind of astonishing. It's like Rutgers football when Greg started, even through Kyle Flood.
Yeah.
Every year they would signing 5, 6, 9 kids out of Florida.
Right.
And all of a sudden Chris Ash like stopped recruiting Florida. And I know they added like 2 kids at the end, and I'm not counting like IMG kids like Art, you know, and Jalen Jordan, because they were Northeast kids that just went down there. And I asked some people who were like, I'm like, did you guys not realize that they're good football players in Florida?
Right.
And they said that for whatever reason, like on their board, like they had Florida kids, but they just always wanted to hammer the New Jersey Northeast angle. But the problem is, and the numbers bear out, in the meantime, Indiana, Illinois, Purdue, those programs that Rutgers has to beat, they were raiding Florida.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they're pulling up, you know, five kids a year. And a part of it's a lovey, obviously, like Greg, former Bucks coach. But what's so fascinating about Florida is, you know, Penn State, Ohio State, Michigan, they go into Florida to get, you know, the top tier kids. The kids at Rutgers, for now, isn't really competing for.
Right.
But Michigan State doesn't really play in Florida at all. Maryland dabbles a little bit. The Western schools don't really do a whole lot. So, like, in terms of Big Ten football, it's kind of this relatively thing that Rutgers should be able to get kids in. But for whatever reason, for 4 or 5 years, they just were letting Indiana and Illinois take those kids.
Yep.
That's why I think Greg is changing. And the last thing is, someone told me about this about Florida and why Panagos is so critical. I know people get very excited about Fran Brown and Sean Gleason, rightfully so. I think Jim was probably the most important hire, maybe, because he said there are, you know, someone told me there are guys in Florida. You just need to know where to find them.
Yeah.
And Jim Panagos is a guy that, and Greg, that they go and find.
Right. I certainly agree with you. He's been important. I do have to say, though, that Fran Brown is exactly as advertised, the guy you needed, like to get back into South Jersey and to start winning these battles. Now I'm going to see, we have to see what he's going to do in North Jersey, if he's going to start really picking off kids, you know, from the big parochial powers. We'll talk about that a little bit later on. And he's also, of course, as we, you know, the number of transfers, you completely turn over the roster that way. And that includes a new quarterback. It's like every year now we have Noah Vedral, is how you pronounce it?
Noah Vedral.
Vedral, kid from Nebraska. I mean, it's, and you hit this one right as soon as he went on the market, you knew that Rutgers was going to be in the market for him. You know, I think we have reached the point now with the quarterback transfers that we know better to think the savior's coming in here. That said, if you watched the team last year, you know they had to get someone who could be you know, add to the room there. And I think some of his attributes, from what I've read, and I haven't looked at the film, but from what I've read, kind of fit into what Gleason will want to do offensively. I mean, what have you seen as far as this kid and what his potential is?
He's very athletic. He's a really accomplished rusher. My first kind of takeaway was, I know that Rutgers fans really appreciated, you know, what Johnny Langan did. Like, I don't really see him. I wouldn't have shocked me if Johnny Langan's changing positions by the time we get to camp, or at some point, because Vedral kind of, you know, Vedral's a better passer, and I think Vedral is equal or a better runner than him.
Right.
So it's like that kind of takes any, you know, any of that element that Langan had to kind of fit Gleason's offense, Vedral kind of overlaps him on. I think it's a great pickup for Rutgers because he's not coming in to be the savior. Where in the past, in the Ash era, it was, we need to get a quarterback from someone because we haven't been able to develop our own.
Yeah.
In this situation, Vedral's coming in. He's going to compete with Art. I think that that's a pretty even competition. You know, obviously, neither guy's had a spring practice, and you know, both guys are basically new staff. And even if he beats that Art, great. You've got a starter for 2 years because he's eligible for 2 years. And if he doesn't, you've seen that offensive line. I don't, even if Art wins the job outright, you know, it's still guaranteed that Art's going to play 24 to 26 straight games the next two seasons. You're going to need a backup at some point.
Of course. Gosh.
I think Vedral, he's a quality backup, and I think he ran a no-huddle offense that moved quick at Nebraska, which is what Gleason wants, to snap the ball every 15 seconds. Mm-hmm. That's what they were trying to do there. He's a kid who has been Big Ten experience. Doesn't have the world's greatest arm, but he does have a good arm. He's made some big throws. So I thought it was a great – I always say, you know, I think Rutgers fans thought that Greg was going to have the ability to kind of lure in some big name, you know, five-star quarterback prospect like the kid from USC, JT Daniels. They're not there yet.
No.
It's a team that's had the worst offense in major college football for years. No one knows what Gleason's system is going to look like. They don't have any proven receivers. They don't have a good offensive line situation. They needed to get a guy who's got some upside and some experience, but was not going to go to a big program and be handed a job. He had to come to a place like Rutgers and fight to be a Power Five starter. Yeah, that's what they got.
He's a transitional player, and you mentioned it. They're going to have to finally develop that quarterback. And we've been talking about this ad nauseum since Gary Nova walked off campus. I mean, they're going to have to find a kid who they can turn into a 3-year starter. You know, I mean,
they've had seven FBS transfers since Gary Noble played his last game. Seven.
That wasn't that long ago. It was 2011, right?
2014.
14. Oh, that's just nuts. Oh, man. You know? Unbelievable. All right, let's dive into true or false. We haven't done this in so long. It'll be fun. You know the rules. Do true or false. I'll take Sarge's place and answer the questions myself as well. All right, here we go. True or false. The infusion of transfer talent has changed your outlook on next season.
False.
Yeah, it's funny. I'm going to go false there, too. We're going to dive into that, why the reasons are. True or false, Art is still the starting quarterback when the season begins.
False.
I think it's true, and I'll explain why when we get there.
Okay.
True or false, Rutgers will finish with a top 20 recruiting class.
False.
False. That's very hard. They're 17 now. That's hard to do. Rutgers will finish with a top 30 recruiting class. True or false?
False.
Yeah, I got to go false too. And I asked my man Todrick about this. True or false, Rutgers will finish with a top 40 recruiting class.
I'll say true to that.
True. I think that's where they're going to finish, in the mid-30s, I bet. True or false, Big Cliff, and that's who I'm going to call him because, as we know, I cannot pronounce the name Amururi. Big Cliff makes Rutgers Hoops a top 25 team next season. True or false?
False. I'll explain later.
Okay, I'm going to go true. I think that there's enough buzz about them. All right, true or false, Rutgers is going to start ditching non-revenue sports to help make the budget.
False.
I also agree that it is false. True or false, Sarge will cover another Rutgers game in my lifetime. True or false?
True.
I know that's gonna be the big X factor if we ever see him again. I'll say true as well. And finally, social distancing in the press box. It's what we've always wanted because we're tired of sweating on each other. True or false?
True.
Yeah, so absolutely. God, let's bring it on. There's plenty of room up there. I can, it's not a problem. For whatever reason, and Hasim, if you're listening, Jimmy Gill, you put all of us, you stick us on top of each other. This is the perfect opportunity to give us all 6 feet of 6 feet of room, please.
No, I've already volunteered. I said if there's limited capacity, I'll sit in the stands and cover the game. You know, I was like, tell Greg, I'll just sit right behind the bench.
He's going to want you nowhere near that place. All right, so you don't think, you also agree with me on this, and I thought you might bite. You don't think what's happened here with the bringing of players in changes what you thought the season was going to be?
No, I mean, I always thought this was a 3-4 win team. I think it's very possible that this team starts 3-0. Like, let's just assume they play the full schedule.
Yeah.
They beat Monmouth, they beat Syracuse, they beat Temple. You know, everyone's feeling good. You know, they get a vote or two in the AP Top 25, and then they go 1-8 in the Big Ten.
Right.
I just can't imagine that Greg is not. I mean, they went winless in the Big East. You won. There's no way in my mind that Greg is going to have a team go winless in the Big Ten again. They have to end that streak, because if they go 0-9 in the Big Ten, then they're sitting at 30 straight Big Ten losses, and the Northwestern team of the Dark Ages is suddenly in position to be popping champagne, because then they would be in striking distance of that ugly 38-game Big Ten losing streak.
Right,
so,
right.
But that being said, I think this is a 3-9 or 4-8 team right now. I don't think anything changes. Now, if Noah Vedral comes out and he's a hot shot and they can get some receivers and the offensive line is better, yeah, maybe you could talk me into this team having a puncher's chance at pushing 5 or 6 wins. But right now, I still think it's a 3 or 4 win team.
That's a lot of ifs, yeah. And this is my other thing. Yeah. We're talking about so much change. Like, I tell you, I'm just curious to see the roster. Like, I'm guessing that
when we get our hands on that roster,
we're going to be like, it's going to take you half an hour to figure out who left, who's gone, who's here. I mean, we haven't gotten the full
We know there's no roster. And I point out, I'm like, you guys do know you were supposed to play a spring game a month ago. Right. Like, would you have had a roster by then?
It's going to be a completely different team. That's so much movement around, so much shifting. I think they'll be better fundamentally, but it's just hard to see them improving along the lines to a point where this team is going to be
blocking and tackling is not going to get you from 2 wins to 6. Right,
exactly. So. Yeah, that's going to be the biggest trick. And you think that it's going to be the new kid is going to be quarterback. You think he's going to win?
I wrote this when I did my film review. I think it's like 51-49 Vedral. Just because I think Vedral, my guess is that the way I look at it is Art obviously has a better arm. Vedral is a better runner. I don't think Vedral has a bad arm. And I also think that Art is a lot more mobile than people give credit for.
Right.
But I think that when you look at the roster they have, the talent they have, and Greg has said this about Gleason, he's a guy who his scheme fits his players. He doesn't try to jam his players into his scheme. I just think the sum of Rutgers' parts, we know they can run the ball really well with Pacheco and Aaron Young and Kayron Adams. We know they don't have a lot of proven wide receiver talent. We know the offensive line is going to be shaky. I just think this might be more of a run-first, no-huddle attack than a pass-first, and that might hew towards Vedral. But I don't think this is – I think this is a straight-up, you know, too close to call race, but I just think that they might be better with Vedral given their personnel.
Right. And I think they're going to. I do think that Greg is going to like Art. I think he's going to like his toughness. They're going to like his. In fact, he's a local kid, so I wouldn't rule that out. Just because he's got experience, he's got more experience than Vedral does. So
yeah,
I mean, I agree it's a toss up, but if I had to pick one now, I'm gonna go with Art. Give him the nudge. All right. What anything else we have to address there? Well, not ditching teams. I really believe that. I've heard that from multiple people that some of these teams are actually money makers now for the university. What do you think about baseball again?
They're money.
11 scholarships.
They're money makers with the scholarships, obviously. There's like 60, 70 women on the rowing team.
Yeah.
I can't, they don't have 60-70 rowing scholarships. So you think about that. And I think the other thing too is, and I've talked with people, is that Rutgers and other athletic departments, they need to save money now. Whereas if you cut a team, you're not saving money probably for two or three seasons because you've got to honor the scholarships of the athletes that are still there. And not all of them are going to leave, especially when you get to these smaller sports. You've got to still pay all the coaches. You know, so a lot of these Rutgers sports, they've got head coaches with 2-3 years left on their deal. They still got to pay those coaches, you know. And in this current climate, if you're a coach and you've got 3 years of salary, you might not be thinking, oh, I'm going to move across the country to keep coaching. Right. You might just, you know, chill. So you have that, obviously. So I think a lot of these teams you've seen get cut, it's a convenient crisis. You know, never let a good crisis go to waste. They've been wanting to cut these teams for a while at these schools. Now they can do it. And I do think that at the lower levels, D2, D3, it's probably more of a, you know, when they're not – when these coaches are on one-year deals to begin with and they're not a lot of scholarship players, yeah, you're probably saving money and fixing your budget there. But if you're Rutgers, even if you cut a sport, you're not necessarily going to – you're not going to save money for 2 or 3 years. And at that point – you hope that the world's back to normal and the cash is flowing again.
All right, let's dive into your questions from Rutgers Insider. And first, I got to say, I am humbled. We all are humbled and grateful that you guys have stuck with us. We've only lost about a dozen subscribers, and given you know that the economy went to you know what, and that you know, there's been no sports. Thank you for sticking with us. We're going to make it certainly worth your while when things get back humming again. And you had a lot of good questions, and most of them, I dealt with stuff we've talked about a little bit with what the season, what the season looks like. And this was a good one. I like it. So assume they cut capacity to 17,000, 20,000, and that students are allocated 5,000, 8,000, which is probably more than they will be. How would the remaining capacity in that stadium be allocated? Oldest season ticket holders, biggest donors, you get half of your normal purchase. Will they serve food? Or do we just all stay home with a 72-inch Samsung and call it a day? That's a great question. I don't know how you do that. I mean, I guess in some ways you have to, like as we talked about, see how it sorts out. You got to give, I mean, obviously Ron Garuti's going to have a seat. You know, like guys, Jeff Dallas is going to have a seat. Guys who have donated to the program. But what do you do with the casual fans, guys? How do you think you solve that problem?
I think you might see a situation like maybe, I think, you know, Iowa State has kind of been a leader. Like they were the first athletic department to cut coaches' salaries. And they're kind of the first department to come out and say, like, this is our plan.
Yeah,
and I think they've sort of had some flexibility because Iowa has never – I just read this. I couldn't believe it. They've never had a stay-at-home order.
Yeah.
Like they've restricted things, but they've never really kind of officially done this. So they kind of have the ability to make things up because they don't have a government body kind of setting the tone for them. Yeah. I think it might be season ticket holders. I think obviously you're going to have to deal with one of the things, all these football contracts, especially non-conference games, but also conference games, you know, there's ticket allotments to the visiting team. You know, what happens to that? Like, do you still have to give, Michigan's coming here this year. Do you still have to give Michigan 2,000 tickets and let them distribute who's coming?
Yeah, that's a great question.
Food, I would think you can serve food because it's really no different than like takeout.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, they're going to mobile ticketing on the Rutgers app, which is going to save the university, I think, mid to high six figures this year. I think simply just not printing the season tickets. Right. But I think down the road, they think it's going to be a significant, savings of high six figures just because they're not going to necessarily have to pay as many ticket scanners. I think there might be some like actual stationary scanning devices at some point when they see this. But, you could order food on your app and just go walk up to the concession stand and pick it up. I think it'll be like a grocery store. It'll probably be like a big circle. Like you got to go one way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I could see maybe you open gates at certain times and you kind of slowly fill the stadium in bottom to top.
Right. It's going to be very interesting. And let's take it to the next step. Now, we're talking football where you can do it. I mean, the rack, you finally get to this place where you've got your basketball arena, picket demand's got to be sky high after that season. It's been it's the most feared home court in the East now, 18-1 there. What happens there? I haven't even thought about that. I mean, you limit that to 2,000 people? I mean, well, how do you solve the problem of having all those people indoors in the winter during flu season?
Yeah. It's a great question. I tend to think that it wouldn't shock me if college basketball actually – it wouldn't shock me if we see a fall where we play college football on time, but we see drastic changes with the other sports. Like, do you really need to send the Rutgers soccer team to Michigan State?
Right.
I think, men's soccer team. Like, I think what's this year, we're like, hey, Rutgers, I even think baseball down the road, like Rutgers baseball can just play Maryland four times. Like,
yeah,
it doesn't really matter.
It's easier for the outdoors and the spring sports at that point. My God.
But I think for basketball, it also wouldn't shock me if they just say, okay, we're just not going to tip off until January 1.
Right.
Because you can move a fit of basket. I mean, I know Steve Peichel's not going to like it. But you could jam all those games and starting in January and still have the tournament on time, I don't know how they would do it. I think there's a chance that you might just have to say no one gets in the rack, which would be horrible. But
it'd be horrible. It'd be absolutely horrible.
It would be horrible, but you got to keep the ship moving at some point.
The financial impact. Another insider wants to know. What would the financial impact be with having football with no fans? One would assume it would be less impactful to Rutgers than most Big Ten schools. Although RU is certainly hoping for a Schiano year one bump. It's still a lot smaller. That's a good point. And the attendance hasn't been great the last few years. Certainly Michigan, we had the big house, 105,000 people. They're going to collect more ticket revenue. That said, Rutgers is in the unenviable position that's already relying heavily on subsidies from the university, which is in its own financial crisis now. Forget just athletics. Yes. The entire university is going to lose a lot of money from the state. It's going to lose some tuition. I mean, it's going to be a crunch. And Barchi has already said that. I mean, I don't think Pat Hobbs knows. I don't think anybody knows the answer to this question. But
no, I don't think they do.
It's going to be rough.
When I wrote this like right when the pandemic started, I wrote this. I did an interview with Pat, and Pat said, and it makes sense that Rutgers was basically breaking even through the spring because while they lost like money from the NCAA tournament disbursement from the conferences, because the NCAA they just handled like $275 million when they were supposed to hand out $600 million to the leagues, but they saved all that money from not having to travel for all the spring sports, no recruiting budget, no on-campus meals. So they saved money there. So they were about even. But I think it's impossible. We're not going to know until the state sets their budget, which I believe Governor Murphy's pushed the fiscal year back to the end of August.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So I think they're not going to know until A, they know what they're doing with football, and B, you know, like, for instance, if you're a Rutgers student and you choose not to attend classes on campus, there, of course, it sounds like everyone's going to accommodate kids who want to stay at home learning. Well, are they going to ding those kids for a student fee?
Right. Yeah.
Like, that's going to be the big thing. You know, I think the student fees, the direct, you know, institutional support, you know. But I think the other thing, too, is with a new president coming in, everyone, times are tough. You know, we know for a fact that Rutgers is, you know, the internal loans from the university bank. What I want to know is, do they get to a point where it's just such a mess that the best way to approach it is just to kind of clear the books of everybody?
Yeah.
Could. You know, and obviously, I think the big thing too is the Big Ten going to try to help some of these schools that are hurting desperately? Because if you're the Big Ten, whether it's Rutgers or any other program, you can't have an athletic department basically withering on the vine. You need to make, you know, so is the Big Ten going to start providing its own stimulus packages?
So many things eventually that we do not have the answer to. All right, here's a recruiting question. How many spots are left in 2021? I assume they are holding for Bullock, Vandermark, Esteem. I hear a lot about Keeler, Barrow. These are obviously a bunch of recruiting names that you guys may or may not know. But it doesn't seem like we have many spots left. What is the realistic expectation? And they also wants to know, you know, seems like they have to take in a lot of guys with lower ratings than other top 20 classes. What is the realistic final ranking for the class? Is it in the low 20s? I still think that sounds great. I asked Todrick this question. I emailed it to him because I thought it was a good one. And obviously, it's his area's expertise. He would know better than us. He says, I expect Rutgers to take at least 25 recruits for 2021 and probably more by using blue and gray shirt techniques that they used the last time around. I think the class likely ends up ranked in the low to mid 30s, but would be really impressed if they can stay in the 20s, but they will need to add a couple of 4-stars. So they'll save 3 to 4 slots for 4-stars and already have 2, 3, 4-star types, although only one player is actually ranked that high. Hence, this class is shaping up to be a strong class overall. Some of these guys would have gotten plenty more offers if there was a camp season. So that's a great answer from the man itself. Another, this is a great, and then you're going to love this. Someone asked specifically about Bergen Catholic defensive tackle Tywon Malone, I'm pronouncing that word, who's number one prospect in New Jersey. And I looked it up, Cratch. He wants to know if Rutgers has a chance. And I went online, and his college list, this is great. He's got offers and warm interest from 4 schools. Ohio State, obviously, with Larry Johnson recruiting him. Ole Miss, with Chris Partridge recruiting him, familiar name. Rutgers, yes, with Jim Panagos recruiting him, obviously defensive line coach. And then at the bottom, Alabama. And you know who's recruiting him for Alabama, of course. Kyle Flood. That is...
Well, you know, I was joking with someone. I said, you know, in a way, Kyle Flood, you could say indirectly, like, denuclearized like the Big North recruiting board. He tried to hire Partridge. He tried to hire Partridge, and obviously that fell apart, and Partridge goes to Michigan. Okay. Yep. Then Ash says that was a pretty good idea. Let me bring Nunzio in. Okay. But Nunzio comes in. Toll gets forced out of Bosco. Nunzio comes in. And then Greg hires Augie, and it's like, it's over, basically. You know, like, that crazy time period where, like, you know, Paramus Catholic and the smoke machine and, like, the recruiting wars and all the controversies and the sniping, it's like, it's over.
Amazing.
And the first kind of domino was Kyle Flood taking Partridge off the playing field, and PC basically like, hey, we're going to kind of go back to normal here.
I think the answer to your question, the question is that they're definitely in the mix for this kid by all accounts, but he is the kind of kid that has been the hardest to get, which is the talented defensive tackle that has high major interest. And you look at
he also, I believe, is a pretty good baseball player.
Oh.
So that might become a factor. I think he might have some interest in playing baseball. And I know I asked people, like, you know, what type of baseball player is, and you know, people said they haven't really seen him play much, but like, you watch video of him in a batting cage, and he looks like, you know, Cecil Fielder in there. So,
yeah.
You know, they said, you know, that's a guy who you know, that could also be a factor in the race. But I think they have a shot. But yeah, it's going to be tough to if they pull that one off, it could end up being the biggest recruiting win.
Right, and then you'll know that. I mean, you know, that we talk about some of they've had. I mean, Savon Huggins did not materialize as the player, but that was huge. You know, Anthony Davis, obviously, this is that kind of level kid. So we'll see what happens. All right, so a few more here. How do you envision the quarterback's role in multiple offense? Will it require a mobile athletic type or a more traditional pocket passer that has been the hallmark of the pro style Shiano teams of the past? Of the quarterbacks in camp, who possesses the attributes that will allow the offense to threaten defenses with six playmakers versus the traditional five? Based on everything I've heard, it's not going to be the traditional offense with Shiano in the past, right?
No. Sean DeLisa made it very clear that they want to go fast. Obviously they're going to try to fit their personnel, but they want to run a no-huddle offense. You know, I didn't hear as much of an emphasis as McNulty put on, like with the chunk plays, which, not that Rutgers ever had chunk plays, you know, since I've been around, but no, I think it's going to be a spread offense. It's going to be quick. And I do think that it's, as I said, I think a mobile quarterback who can make things happen with his legs is going to have a really good chance to succeed in this scheme. I just think it's really going to come down to what fits around Art and Vedral. And I think that they might be more of a run team, and I think that might fit Vedral.
The 15-second thing, and I do love that. I do love that approach and that attitude and the attacking style. I think that you're really 2 or 3 years away from seeing. I mean, if you're not going to do what Merringer did, you know, the first year where they were punting the ball after 11 seconds to Michigan and losing eight, that's how you lose 78-0. I just can't imagine that if they don't have the talent to do that, they're not going to do that, right?
Yeah, and I think like 15 seconds, obviously it's fast, but like I was even watching the Vedral tape with Nebraska, and granted, like there was some time, like for instance, he came in the fourth quarter of the Northwestern game. They're trying to eat clock and set up the game-winning field goal. So that's not going to happen. But even when they were like moving at their warp speed, I had a timer, and like it would still be like 21 seconds, 23 seconds, 18 seconds. So 15 seconds, I'm sure, is the goal, but that's fast. Like, I don't even know if a well-oiled, like, Oregon offense under Chip Kelly was getting 15 seconds every time.
Right. All right, a couple more. Good more. Have there been any developments regarding the investigation into the softball program? Maybe I've missed it, but I've not heard anything since the law firm was hired to conduct the investigation. I think the last thing we heard that it was getting close. And then the world fell apart. So I half expected them to drop it on the Friday before Memorial Weekend in the middle of a pandemic. The ultimate news drop slot. It hasn't happened. This is one of those things that Sarge keeps up with. He's not on the call, but you know, it's almost done. So
yes.
All right. And this is a funny one from our friend Kevin Fine in Indiana. Once Greg wins the Rose Bowl in year six and Pat Hobbs becomes commissioner of the Big East, could he see himself handing over the reins to Gleason and taking a Barry Alvarez type of role as AD? That's great. I don't think that Greg Schiano wants to be athletic director. I think he just wants to select the athletic director. No. I don't think that's something he'd be interested in. Oh, you know, who knows? Things change. You know, I will say that, you know, and this is going to be the fascinating kind of dynamic now where fundraising completely changes at a university in a lot of ways. You know, he wants to build this facility for football. He needs it, the Death Star. And, you know, believe me, coronavirus is not going to change that priority for him. No. It might make it a lot harder though, right? I mean, that's going to be a fascinating thing to see if he can still get the donors to invest in that.
Yeah, I think it's going to be tough. I know that they're still kind of coming up with the renderings. I think that they're not necessarily in any like big rush, like, you know, this has to be done yesterday sort of situation, but I do expect by the fall they will have some sort of, you know, makeups of what the place is going to look like. My understanding is, I think it's going to be like the Death Star. Like, they're not going to put they're not going to replace the bubble and then build a facility. This is going to be all in one.
Right.
You know, a football, you know, what was it that our friends at the RU Scoop, Shiano's like football palace or something.
Yes.
You know, it's going to be palatial, but it's still on the board, but I do agree with you. I think that it's going to – and I think Rutgers, I know, in fact, they want to be sensitive to the fact that there's a pandemic going on. and it's a hard economic situation for everyone.
Of course.
So I think they're not going to immediately, you know, hey, once football's back, they're not going to be running around trying to pass the hat necessarily from day one.
Absolutely. All right. That's all I got. You got anything else?
No, I just get back to – we talked about basketball. If it's like a preseason top 25 hype situation, yeah, sure, I think adding Cliff adds it. I don't know if – because the way I look at Cliff is Cliff going to be better in year one than Shaq Carter is?
Yes.
Because you're basically trading off Shaq Carter for
defensively,
Cliff.
Defensively, he's – I mean – yes, the answer to that question is yeah. Offensively, I don't know. I don't know if it matters offensively. Yeah. You would think he would be, just based on everything I've seen, the size of the kid, shot blocking, rebounding, yeah, you would expect that this would be the player that they can put up front that would move, allow Miles Johnson to get out of those Big Ten battles where he's constantly grinding down and getting in foul trouble against big centers. So I think, I mean, top 25. I think if there's enough, you know, if there's enough buzz about what the team did last year, like that, there's going to be some guys who put them in there. Certainly, they'll be in the others receiving votes area.
Might crack the top 25. And I think, look, if they don't make it in the preseason, they're going to have their chances. We know they're playing Baylor.
Yep.
You know, I've texted it, I've written it. A lot of, you know, scuttlebutt out there about the possibility that they might be making a trip down to Villanova. Yeah. You know, in the Gavitt games, potentially, you know, North Carolina is supposed to come up to play Monmouth.
Yeah.
Maybe that's part of the Big Ten ACC challenge. You know, I do think they're going, whether it's Syracuse, North Carolina, Nova, you know, like a Butler, I do think they're going to get two marquee matchups in the two challenges. And that's going to give them a big chance to make a splash and kind of propel themselves into the national talk even more.
And I will come back, and this is a good way to tie it all in. The last thing I did in a normal world, right, was the flight to Indianapolis, where we're all going to the tournament, and we don't know what's going to happen. And we get on the plane, and it's sort of a normal world, and we land, and all the phones from all – there must have been 15 Rutgers people on that plane – you know, a couple of them told me they were listeners here. So, you know, you guys can certainly remember the story too. And the phones are, everybody's phones are buzzing because there's no Wi-Fi on the plane. We get near the bottom and we find out the fans cannot go to the Big Ten tournament. That to me was the moment. That's like the last normal thing that happened to me sports wise. It's just incredible to think about. That was only 2 months ago. You know, it's just.
I know.
Amazing. All right, everybody, stay safe and healthy out there. We'll try to do this sooner than 2 months. Thanks for listening. Thanks for subscribing if you're a subscriber to the A-Rutgers Insider. If not, nj.com/text. We'd love to have you aboard. And hopefully we'll have a podcast soon. Thanks again. nj.com/text. We'd love to have you aboard. And hopefully we'll have a podcast soon. Thanks again.